Come on, why don't we all stand together? And why don't we give ourselves a hand for coming happy to live in the family. Whole lot going on, and whole lot that we're facing, and so it really takes, it's going to take the unity of the community to get it done. So y'all can just grab hands for me. And let's connect with each other. Let's pray. Father, we are so grateful for today. We are so grateful for the drive that is in us that brings us out on Saturday, high afternoon, to do your business and your work. Thank you for sending everybody this way. We ask your most choice blessings and benedictions on us as we go into this time of Halloween, that you give us your guidance and your direction. Lead us in a way that will please you. It will move us towards towards justice. And it is to that end that we pray. So bless the hand of the person at home. Bless everybody who's here. Bless everybody who's on their way. And make our gathering successful today. We ask it. It is to that end that we pray. And everyone say, amen.
Witnessed, perhaps on the second, the video footage of the murder of Oscar Grant, that we converted our righteous anger and indignation into righteous activity, into righteous activism, into standing up to do something to bring change to the very real world that we have lived in. You are here in the right time. You are sitting among the right people that have gathered to do the very right thing that we can do to make sure that justice rains down in the Bay Area. So let me say, as we open, that today is a very special day to the family of Oscar Grant. And we should all celebrate together what makes this day so special for them. I spent a few minutes this afternoon in the Hayward Hills as the family of Oscar Grant gathered to celebrate the 5th birth anniversary of his beautiful daughter, Tatiana. It is a big question. And we surely want the Grant family to know that we love them. And let me say that the beauty of what we are experiencing in the Grant family, it's magnificent to know that we're not dealing with a family that simply wants justice for itself. We're dealing with a family that understands the principles of justice very well. For it was the Reverend Martin Luther King Jr. who declared that injustice anywhere is a threat to justice everywhere. And what we're finding with the family of Oscar Grant that will be joining us momentarily is that they recognize that while they grieve the loss of their son, and we all do, none of us are happy, and none of us are pleased. In fact, every one of us are angry by what happened with the murder of Oscar Grant. And we join the family with that feeling. But the family has such a focused mind and such a tremendous heart that it understands very clearly that this is not simply about Oscar Grant. While we were at the Barks yesterday, as it was seeking public intervention or public involvement over plans to develop a police oversight review process. While we were there, we were blessed to be in position to challenge the process that they were crafting. And it was the family of Oscar Grant who has stated very clearly that we expect BART not to be the same tomorrow as it was yesterday. That since our son has given his life, we demand that BART make a change fundamentally in the way that it does policing. Yeah. And so we have been honored to participate in the process in varying degrees. But can I share something with you? The BART General Manager, Ms. Dorothy Duffy, is a well-paid employee of the BART system. I've heard, I think, Christoph say here, and we appreciate our family and no justice, no BART, but I think Christoph said that her salary is about $300,000 a year. Now, anybody that earns $300,000 a year to manage, surely included in management is thinking. You get paid $300,000 a year to think about the problems confronting the system, to provide some ideas, thoughts, and solutions. And of course, if she's being paid $300,000, you know BART has money to pay who they want to give them good ideas. So because of the public relations nightmare, BART said we're going to hire some thinkers or some investigators or some assessors. And they went and found a minority-owned firm, Myers Nave, and said that we're going to pay you first $100,000-something to take over the, or to investigate the internal affairs investigation
that occurred with the murder of Oscar Grant, internal to Barr. Now, Myers Mame taking over the internal affairs investigations means that their findings related to personnel matters are confidential and cannot be made public. But they wanted the world to know that they hired a minority-owned firm. Then they came back later and declared, well, we're going to hire Noble. Not to get what each letter stands for. I think it's National Officers of Black Law Enforcement Executives, something like that. Black police that were formed because prior to the Civil Rights Act and prior to groups like the Black Panther Party, you could hardly find a police officer black in any city with large black populations. So Noble was formed to demand access and equal promotion opportunity. But not only that, but Noble was to demand that law enforcement agencies treated black, brown, Latino, and poor communities with respect. I have to say this is one of the problems that our people have who are in positions of authority and policy and power is that sometimes we take the position, the authority, and the power to mean more than the people that sent us there to serve. So we find ourselves top-heavy in representing those that have dominated our lives before we were hired. So these professional organizations sometimes become advocacy for personal promotion or advocacy for salary hikes for the 20 of us that work in this police department that are black, as opposed to demanding justice for the people that have historically been brutalized by law enforcement agencies in Oakland, along BART, in San Francisco, in San Leandro, and in cities all across America, where it seems like 9 out of 10 law enforcement-involved shootings find a black shooting victim. So we appreciate that Noble was hired. But I was blessed to meet the national chairman when they came to accept the contract. Not while they were accepting, but in the same weekend. And we had a dialogue. He would like to come to the town hall meeting, and we'd be more than happy to receive him and hear what Noble wants to accomplish. However, I said to him after he said, you know, I believe that we should think out of the box. I said, good. That gave me something to talk about. So I said to him, if we were thinking out of the box, brother, when Oscar Grant was killed, then the black law enforcement officers would have been the first in the city of Oakland to stand up and declare that what happened to Oscar was wrong and to demand justice in the murder of Oscar when he backed up. Yeah. I said, now, we've been at this for 4.5 months. And we've not heard from black law enforcement practitioners yet. I've heard from some in private. Like you have heard. I don't like what I saw. It wasn't right. Policies weren't followed properly. Procedures were not effectively used. But they say this in private. But we told you right here, for an example, in this town hall meeting, that what the SWAT team did in Oakland when they went after LaBelle Nixon was foolhardy. Didn't we say something like that here?
Yeah.
Now, a month later, after the police union has declared a vote of no confidence about the SWAT officer, a month later, OPD SWAT is not functioning. SWAT from the Alameda County Sheriff's Department is servicing all SWAT needs in Oakland because they realize that whatever happened on that fateful day, we don't know the fullness of what had happened. I can tell you what I do know. I look at the footage on the internet, and they claim that they were chasing a gunman in a building that had murdered, at that point they claim, 2 officers. But when I saw the way the officers ran at the door, without regard for their own lives. Do y'all remember old TV shows called SWAT?
Yes.
They did a remake in a movie form with Samuel L. Jackson not long ago. I grew up watching SWAT. So as children, we would play SWAT. Because they would jump through windows and hit flips and come up ready to shoot. Well, in reality, SWAT teams are not hanging from ropes crashing through windows. In reality, SWAT teams don't jump through the window while the window is closed, crashing through the glass, and come out of it in a backflip or a forward flip and come out in a firing position. They don't do that in reality. But on that fateful day, they bum rushed the door where a man was said to have a weapon. They knew that they thought the man had a weapon, and they bum rushed the door blindly. Well, we questioned their activity right here in this town hall. And there were some out of fear of political retribution, because law enforcement unions are some of the greatest political forces in cities and in the state of California. So they had taken the position that to analyze what happened on that day would be insensitive to the officers who were grieving the loss of life. Well, our community grieved too. Is that true? The pastors of Oakland went out and held a public memorial, yet the mayor of the city, who happens to be black, the congressperson in the city, who happens to be black, the council person in the area where the shooting occurred, who happened to be black, the county supervisor of the area where the shooting occurred, who happened to be black, all of them were cut out of the publicly financed memorial service of those officers. Well, they had crafted the political idea that none can critique what law enforcement do, and they've now translated that into, if you're standing with Oscar Grant, then you must be a supporter of the shooter of those officers. See, we're not going to allow them to shape the debate. First and foremost, we don't know what happened when those officers were shot. I do know that officers were shot. And I do know that the SWAT team was foolhardy in the way that it rushed the door, and it's validated by the police officers vote themselves of no confidence against their own commander. Well, now, all those things being said, we gathered after some weeks of meeting with BART as they would consider police oversight and reviews. They presented the community with 9 separate examples of police oversight on Saturday, May the 2nd, and called together committee members to analyze and seek a way to find a police oversight system that would fit the BART model. After the committee met the first time, members of the family of Oscar Grant were present, but they were dissatisfied with 1, the police presence, and 2, the absence of respected community leadership. So the Grant family said to BART that you need to include, if you're going to have a community-based dialogue over formats of police oversight, respected members of the community. So Oscar's godmother, Diana, called me and may have called Reverend Buford. I'm not sure who made the contact with him. And may have called some others and asked, would we attend the oversight review subcommittee meeting with members of BART, members of the BART Police Union, and we would represent, along with anyone else that wanted to come, the public. I have to tell you that when I went to the meeting, I was surprised by the level of law enforcement presence. When I got off an escalator, headed up where the public meetings are held, there was an officer at the top of the escalator. At first glance, I thought, oh, well, maybe he's just standing. I walked 5 feet into the hallway, and here were 5 or 6 other officers standing in the hallway. How are you, guy? How are you, sir? How are you, guy? How are you, sir? Now, this meeting has about three members of the BART board on it. Dorothy Ducker, Reginald Lyles, two members of the BART Police Union. They have a separate union for the command staff and for the rank and file officers. There were approximately 10 law enforcement officers securing this meeting of 8 people. Now, they left space available for members of the public to sit in and hear because, as a government agency, this is a public meeting. They cannot close it off. Now, I hadn't paid attention to the packet that was given us that Saturday, May the 2nd, but in it was a list of rules for the meeting. Some of you may have read the rules. I think I took it to the restroom. But I hadn't read the rules until I got into this meeting when I saw how many police were there and they had the rules posted on stands in at least 5 different locations in the room. Did you see that, Reverend Buford? They were there this last night. They had these stands up with the rules of conduct. Maybe they should have let Reverend Amos Brown moderate the meeting. We would really follow the rules then. They know what I'm talking about. But in any event, we have the meeting. They're shooting dialogue around. Now, because of scheduling, I was not present. Neither was Reverend Buford. I think he was present more than I was during the fullness of the meetings. But they began to mic down to determine a system they thought would best fit BART. But I was present when Reverend Buford critiqued the form that you read part of on yesterday that gave a description of an auditor model for police oversight. Now, many have argued that the auditor model of police oversight is the weakest model because it has the least amount of civilian participation or citizen participation. And in the current model that was proposed, what they in essence said was, we, BART, are going to hire an auditor who, whenever there's a certain level of police conflict, that auditor will go to the scene and observe. And when it's done, have some investigative power to determine whether or not police actions on that day were appropriate. They felt that, according to the way I understood it, that the San Francisco model was not so good for the BART system because the San Francisco model received 2,000 or more complaints from the public, and they claimed that BART had only received, on the average, this is what they said yesterday, 12 to 20 citizen complaints per year. Now, I want to make sure that you're clear that Reverend Buford and I were not there to rubber stamp what they were saying. That's why I told them when I spoke, I've received several complaints in the last week. Now, if you took that times 52 weeks in a year, I, Brother Keith, who does not, work for BART, have received at least 3 citizen complaints, some in writing, in the last week. Well, if I published my phone number as someone willing to receive complaints, I'm afraid of what would happen. So if you take 3 times 52, that means I might receive 156 complaints myself in a year. Many people who make complaints don't complain formally. We go home and complain. Mama, I was in BART today. And that officer cussed me out. Daddy or pastor, I rode the BART train. And they accused me of stealing a ticket and threw me into the wall. Mama, daddy, friend, pastor, I went to bar. And the officer said, now you one of them Oscar Grant after this, ain't you? And cussed me out. Last Saturday, we were sitting here. And we received, while we were sitting here, a complaint about a 47-year-old brother who was manhandled by Bart at Coliseum Bar, and they would not let the brother of his own volition leave the station the way he wanted to. They told him to get out of here and go out the back door after cussing him out. In other words, this idea that they receive 12 to 20 complaints in a year is ridiculous. And we appreciate that members of the public came to voice the ridiculousness of some of the things that they said. Mr. Radulovich, who sat on the board, in the opening comments said, in words, I forget the exact words, I wrote them down. I'm not thrilled, thank you. That's why we got a team. We got a team. And what the enemy has a problem with is how to handle the team. There's so many minds and capacities and abilities and heart in the team, they don't really know where it's going to come from. Maybe that's why they had 10 armed officers in the room with us, 5 or 6 at the front door, 6 or 7 squad cars parked in front of the building. Maybe they were afraid of the team. But the team heard Mr. Radulovich say, I'm not thrilled. Now he's sitting on the board and a member of the committee. But I didn't see him there when we were dialoguing over. I came in late, so I didn't understand at that point exactly how they got to the point of an auditor model, except that they felt that because of the size of BART compared with some other cities in comparison, that they would need a different model in some ways from what particularly San Francisco has, and decided it would blend several models. But they chose this auditor idea and presented it to us. But in its representation, they didn't tell you that Reverend Buford took issue with them over what they described as the civilian participation, or citizen participation. Didn't you? He said, you've given, in words, 2 pages to describe what the auditor does, and half a paragraph to describe what the civilian or the citizens will do. And when you all chimed in and said, the citizens' review has no teeth, you said exactly what we said, walking away from it. Oh, this is going to be jammed. Oh, well, they get what they get. But with a $300,000 salary, you would think that the notes would be taken properly. Right? With the elected officials who spend thousands to be elected and are paid whatever they're paid to perform their duty, you would think they would enhance this form a little better. We really want to appreciate those who came out to that meeting to set the record straight. That we are not satisfied with a citizen review where the citizens have no power to review. What they presented was that the auditor would do all the work and come and see a group of citizens one day and say, look, over the last year, we got 52 complaints. That out of those 52 complaints, we thought that 3 of them were real violations of policy. And that out of the 3, that he recommended training for 2 of the officers, and 1 of them got a take-home vacation for a couple of days as suspension. That's what they want us to do, and call it civilian review. Well, quite frankly, if it's a civilian review, then civilians should be doing the reviewing, or citizens. Citizens should be doing the reviewing. If you want my agreement with what you've done or have not done with an abusive officer, I want to know, what did the officer do? Who did he do it to? And what and where is the evidence that validates or disproves the claim. Don't call it a civilian review or a citizen review if we can't review anything but what your paid gun would present us. I shouldn't say gun. Your paid auditor. So the question that ran across my mind as I was reading it and hearing it is, why, how independent is the independent monitor? Or auditor, if you're paying him, how independent is it? And given that fact, will that person seek justice or will that person seek to defend Barr? So the civilian or the citizen element has to be raised commensurate to the level of what they call an auditor. Yes, you need somebody on the scene. But does that somebody on the scene represent Barr, or does that somebody on the scene represent citizens? I think that somebody on the scene should represent the citizens. Because Bart has plenty of money to figure out what happened. They've already figured out what happened to Oscar Grant. They're just not telling them. In fact, they're so crafty, they allegedly haven't even told the board. Let me say that again. They're so crafty that out of their internal affairs investigation, they allegedly have not told the board what the results of the investigation is. Does that make sense? If you run a corporation, that you don't know what happened when your officer shot and killed somebody on live videotape, that you not know what the results of the internal affairs investigation is, that it takes what is now 5 months, and they still don't know. Is the system broken?
Yeah.
Well, in the interest of justice, we want to help them to fix it. Now, some have even now, and we're offering the thought, whether or not Bart even needs a police department. If it has one, do they need weapons? Yeah. And I know everybody's crying about 9/11 and Homeland Security. Well, I don't even think a terrorist has stuck a stick of bubble gum on the Bart track. You've not heard about terrorism at Bart. I know they got their internal, they've been waterboarding people enough to get evidence. Y'all missed it. But they're waterboarding people enough to find out that somebody is allegedly threatening the train systems. Therefore, we have to have a SWAT team at Bart. So they're arguing for increased militarization of Bart police. Oscar Grant is not the first man to be killed by Bart. He's not the first black man to be killed by Bart. He's the third black man. Of all of those killed by Bart, all of them have been black. Is that a fact? It is a fact. And after each, I was told by Oscar's mother today that she spoke with the father of the last Bart shooting victim. I'm losing the name.
Somebody help.
Gerald Hall, who, again, an innocent, unarmed man killed by a Bart officer. That Bart officer was not prosecuted for that shooting. I don't know what happened to that Bart officer. Do we know? That's wrapped up in internal affairs. Here we go again. He shoots dead a young man, and what she said that Gerald Hall's family told her was that they promised after that shooting that they would develop a citizen or civilian oversight process. That was in 1992. What year was it? Where's the review process? They opened the meeting, per my instruction and advice, that you should tell the public what your review process or your complaint process is now. That's where that came from. Because I wanted them to openly state that we don't have a system worth a dime. They said, well, you can email the BART website if you have a citizen complaint. Now, who gets beat up by the police and goes to the internet? Not me. Or you can call. Call who? They really didn't specify who you call. I guess you call Ghostbusters. You call and whoever answers the phone. And again, not for the first time, but for the third time, a BART officer comes to me, a good heart, but the system is not designed to do what his heart dictates. So a brother came here, officer, and said if he had any problems, because I let them know that I received a complaint about brutality from BART that day while we were sitting there. He said, well, here's my card. One of the lieutenants or commanders. And I appreciate the brother. I'm not angry with the brother. But the reality is there's no system currently in place that should be respected by anybody. I wouldn't want to call where there's no one to call, but maybe I know a brother with a card who has no authority in the matter. But out of his personal concern, says, well, let me know if there's a problem. For what? For what? You've got no authority in the matter. Now, if I'm standing in the face of a police officer, while a problem is happening, if I got you in my speed dial, I might call you. But that's not a guarantee of any behavioral change from many law enforcement officers. Can I tell you all a little story? My brother, who serves in the ministry for Minister Farrakhan in Los Angeles, Brother Tony Muhammad, he came up when the minister was here, but I don't think he spoke that day. Highly regarded activist in Southern California. He and others have been responding to homicide scenes, where not just law enforcement committed homicides, but community-based crime that we have to work together to stop. He went to a scene where gangs had been beefing and someone had been shot. When Brother Tony arrived to help keep the peace, law enforcement came to tape off the area and tell people to back up, while Brother Tony is ministering onto people that were grieving. The policeman told him in words, you know, I don't think he had a suit that day. In fact, he didn't. Because he was called as an emergency respondent from the community as a gang intervention activist to the scene of a murder. And when he arrived and began ministering unto the people, LAPD came to him and said in words, Pastor, I hate to cuss in the church. But he said in words, get your ass up on the sidewalk. And Brother Tony turned around and said, excuse me? I said, get your ass. Well, one thing I love about those who love truth, that cussing don't scare us. Y'all with me now? So he stepped to him. Excuse me. I'm a man, and you're going to talk to me as you would talk to a man. Well, he was a police officer, so I won't call him, say he's not a man. But he's a police officer. And they proceeded to attack Brother Tony. He recently won a lawsuit against LAPD for that beating. They attacked Brother Tony and the brothers with Brother Tony. Now, this was a murder scene, so there were already dozens of police on the ground, so it was a fight of about 20 officers against two or three brothers. They arrested Brother Tony. Came out of prison, or jail, not prison, county jail. Lumps on his head, face well swollen. And the reality is, Brother Tony, when they decided to punch him, is because he asked the officer, who's your commanding officer, and pulled out his cell phone. In other words, because of our political activism, we may know the commanding officers. And he did. And when he pulled his phone out to call the commander or the white commander at that hour, they attacked him. Now, do you think that BART police may have taken some cell phones from people on the night that Oscar Grant was killed? Now, Brother Tony is telling them, as I can tell them, or Brother Christopher can tell them, or Pastor can tell them. I know Chief Jordan in Oakland. I may have his number. I'm not on speed dial. I don't call him every day. But I got his number. And if there were a law enforcement problem in this parking lot right now, I believe I can call him, and within a reasonable time, if he doesn't answer the phone, then he might return my call if he respects it. Y'all with me now? Brother Tony pulled out his phone and LAPD attacked him after he told them that he was going to call. What is your name, officer? Who are you? Well, I'm going to have to call your commander. So, now, do you think that maybe Bart took somebody's phone that night? Do you think that BART officers followed all the protocols and procedures for a shooting scene that night? What officers would send a trainload full of witnesses to a homicide away from their investigators? If anything, you stop them and you have them meet with investigators to get their testimony about what happened over whether or not Oscar Grant and his friends had done something wrong, which they didn't, or whether or not the officers on the scene had done something wrong. You know, I spoke about black officers earlier, and that there was so much they could have done and didn't. One black officer said to me while I was getting my hair cut, he said that there's a certain alarm call that is sounded in the policy when a shooting occurs. He told me that he was working that night, and if the alarm had been sounded, that they would have converged on the Fruitvale BART station from all over the area on the call. What he said to me is that no call was given. I wish he would say it in court. I don't know that he would, but he should. Don't you agree? So if an internal affairs investigation has occurred, I don't trust it if it's under the leadership of Chief G, who supported Mr. Mezzoli's jail time. See, now we're dealing with a system that is doing all that it can to protect itself from change. This is why the demand for the firing of Chief G. He didn't seek justice, as evident, when he asked people on law enforcement letterhead, he asked other officers to support Johannes Mezzoli so he's not lonely in jail. I would say you support him by surrendering yourself, go to jail with him, and you all can eat crackers and sardines in a cell together. That's how you support him. Not send him books and put money on his book so he can have a comfortable Santa Rita stay. To show you how the system had circled the wagon around his home, that man got out of jail on $3 million bail and didn't pay the bail. Let me say that again. They didn't write that in the paper. But he got out on $3 million bail and did not pay the bail. Not OR, but partial payment. So I don't have $300,000, can you take $2,000 and let me out and I'll pay you later? The union is going to help me, but in this climate, maybe the union's a little broke like us. So the demand that you are hearing come from the police union's attorney, Raines, that Orloff be taken off the case. Attorney Burris gave me the view, shared with me his view. He said that's an effort to force the DA to accept a lesser bail. I never heard of lowering bail after you've been issued bail. I'm like you, poor person. And when they say $3 million bail, you say, I ain't got it, and you go to jail. That's how we respond, right? Well, now in this reality, they went and found an officer-friendly bondsman who said, I'll set the bail, but you pay me over time. I wish we had bondsmen that would let us pay them overtime. Poor people don't pay their bondsmen overtime. Poor people go get grandma to take a second loan on her house, or poor people go get cousin or grandma or uncle to spend all of their savings that you never get back to bail some poor person out. But Officer Mezzanine pays partial bail and walks after the judge said he was a flight risk. So now the effort is being made to reduce the bail. Now you hear Mr. Raines saying he wants it out of Orloff's hands. Well, that's coded language. What he's saying now is he wants the case out of Alameda County. Because once you take it out of Orloff's hands, where does it go? Does this trial go to Simi Valley with the Rodney King jurors? That's what they're seeking. So now we're now fighting on many tracks to secure justice for the family of Oscar Grant and to determine a system of justice that actually serves justice for the people that are being mistreated by those in authority. Now, let me say as I wind this down, how do we do this? Well, Monday morning, Johannes Mezzer goes back for his preliminary hearing trial. They expect that these hearings may take several days. I want to thank the members of the community council, an idea that was hatched by Pastor Dion, who's at a conference in Richmond today, and sends his regards. But this community council is really more informative and more important than the city council, because it represents a variety of thoughts and passion from good human beings who are representative of the county itself. So the community council is black, the community council is brown, the community council is red, yellow, and white. It is really a community council. And when we sit down to craft ideas that would help bring justice in the murder of Oscar Grant. And the community council declared that on the first day of the trial, that activities have already begun. This afternoon, the Grant family is at a park in Hayward with members of the community council celebrating the fifth birthday of Sister Tatiana, Oscar's baby girl. On tomorrow, there'll be a teach-in. I don't have the information in front of me, but there'll be a teach-in tomorrow from members, here it comes, of the community council to make sure that the whole of the community, see, the reason they're talking about the Mixon shootings is they don't want us talking about justice for Oscar Grant. They want to cloud the issue to keep criticism down against law enforcement. So we want to thank our family of the New Year's Movement for Justice, which is part of the community council, that on tomorrow from 1 o'clock to 4 o'clock at the Humanist Hall at 390 27th Street, they're having a public teach-in called The People versus Mezzer. They are not, and we are not, want to let the community, and we're not going to let Bart, and we're not going to let the DA, and we're not going to let the city and county government forget what happened to Oscar Grant on January the 1st of this year. So on Monday morning, before the trial doors open, we're going to gather for a press event at 8 o'clock a.m. on the steps of the Alameda County Courthouse. And the community council is going to make our demand for justice heard loud and clear. Now, I want to be clear with us that those that are framing the debate that would lead folk to think that somehow the activists demanding justice are responsible for outbursts that have occurred since people have been calling for justice for Oscar Grant, stop being silly. I think that every member of the BART board knows that we didn't throw any paint on them. In fact, they had so many officers in the room, they might have to blame their own police for letting the paint get thrown. Brother Salim, were you with me that day?
Yes, sir.
Did you see that character pacing around the room?
Yelling.
Yeah, yelling.
He looked
did you see me look at him and get away from him?
Oh, yeah, as soon as we left, that's when we had to throw the paint.
Now, we were sharp enough to see a disruptive force. Now, we don't have x-ray eyes. We couldn't see that he had a bottle of paint in his pocket. But this person that hurled paint at Dorothy Ducker, he was obviously a problem from the time the meeting started. Was it obvious? As soon as we walked in, wow. He needed to take his Ritalin. Right, or Prozac. It was obvious that this person here has a problem, and all that was really required was somebody to walk up to him and say, "How are you, sir? Is everything okay?" If it were this meeting, that's what Brother Salim would do. That's what these brothers, excuse me, brother or sister, are you feeling okay? Come on, let me talk to you because it looks like something's irritating. That's what would happen. We would approach you with dignity. We would approach you with honor. Some have been at some town halls when there's been anger expressed out of the audience, right? And somebody walks in, brother and sister, come on now, you know we came here to secure peace for Oscar Grant. This spirit that you're projecting, we don't need that here. You've seen that happen right here at these meetings, haven't you? You mean to tell me? And nobody had been in our meetings like that man was at that BART meeting.
Right.
That's how the man was walking. He stood up next to me for a second. I gave him a look. Yeah, he saw the look. I gave him the step off me look. You all understand those looks, right? I gave him a back up, please, look. And he backed up and went to the other side of the room. And the way he was maneuvering, I spoke with members of the Grant family. I told them, I think we need to leave. So I'm going to make my way out, and maybe you should go. And within seconds, he was throwing paint. Now, BART could have secured that room. They had enough police in there to secure it. So they didn't have to resort to what they've now resorted to. We go to a 10-member meeting with 10 police officers. They've resorted to that because they would like to project the idea that these that are standing for justice for Oscar Grant represent a violent, out-of-control element. We went to a town hall or a public meeting in San Francisco on Thursday. Man, it was worse than the BART meeting. I didn't know you could get worse than BART with 10 people and 10 police until I went to the Housing Commission meeting in San Francisco before our town hall meeting on Thursday. Why did they do that? We looked up, and when we arrived, because Brother Christopher was expected to speak in the program, our brother that comes here with us from San Francisco, you all love Brother Christopher, right?
Yes, sir.
His passion for truth and justice, you all love that, right?
Yes.
Well, when we arrived at the meeting, there were paddy wagons in front. I didn't know we were in the right place. I had never been to the building before. I couldn't see the public that came to see the meeting through the crowd of police. There were more police in the front than BART had. There were at least 30 police officers in a room that seats maybe 60 people. Y'all with me now? Where did that come from? They're projecting an idea that those that are standing for justice are out of control and violent, and they want to frighten the public away for standing for justice with leadership that is respected and honored by the community. It was an effort to demonize and to delegitimize those who are crying for justice. Well, I don't care what they say. When I see you, I see legitimacy. I'm not frightened by haircuts. It doesn't concern me the complexion of our skin, because I know that we have come together week in and week out demanding justice in the murder of Oscar Grant, demanding justice in San Francisco against toxic poison, demanding justice in Antioch against illegal evictions. I know who we're talking to.
Yeah.
But when we gather on Monday, we all want to be vigilant for those characters who seem to come only to disturb and disrupt whatever the proceedings are. We want to state publicly that we go to demand justice. We're not going to get ourselves arrested. That's not our plan. Y'all with me now?
Yes.
Now, we want to get arrested, then we break the law. But we are not seeking to break any law. We're seeking to get law enforcement officers that break the law to be punished. And we already know that, you know, we can't fight our way through this with our hands. You know, when you're in a courtroom, you're in a police station. Don't you know that? Don't you see busloads of people in cuffs come in and out of there every day, every hour? Well, we don't want to catch that bus. Might be safe in BART, though. But we're not going there for that bus. We want to make it loud and clear and as well understood as possible that when we take our stand on the Alameda County Courthouse, we're not going to allow any happy jacks to change what we come there to do. So we'll offer counsel. We'll offer guidance. We'll pray with you. Brother, I see you're a little excited. Let's pray. Y'all with me now? We're not going to allow our call for justice to be distracted. And by the way, if you study U.S. government, you'll discover that they send the distractors into the meetings. Have you heard of the counterintelligence program, which destroyed the Panther Party and others in this city? One of the things that surprised me in my personal study of the counterintelligence program was how quickly they involved themselves with those that were talking about justice. It didn't take a lot of people. If five students gathered together on a college campus and say, we want to be, you know, revolutionaries for justice, and they put out a flyer and asked people or invited people to attend the meeting, guess who always attended? The FBI. And they wouldn't come with their card in their hand and their badge and their gun. They would come looking like the students that were responding to the call. In the Black Panther Party, one of its early members, his name is Earl Anthony.
Yes.
What is his name?
Earl Anthony.
I'm being very specific because you can read the history. He wrote a book called Picking Up the Gun. What's the book called? Now, when he wrote the book, that book would eventually be touted among students of Black history like I am and was, that this is a good way to learn about the Panther Party. I didn't know when I picked up that book called Picking Up the Gun that the writer of the book himself was an informant and an infiltrator paid by the FBI in the Panther Party. You know how I found out? I picked up another book. Years later, after the Freedom of Information Act revealed the depths to which, not the depths, revealed the surface of that which the FBI did against the Black Power movement, they haven't shown us the depths. And we really could not fathom the depths of what some folks will do. You don't really understand Satan. Now, this is a Saturday meeting, not a Sunday meeting. But unless you are personally related, you really don't understand Satan. You don't think like him. You all with me now?
Yes.
So when I picked up another book, I learned so much in my barbershop. There was a book on the table at the barbershop. It was a history of the Black Panther Party. So I was interested, of course. And the foreword was written by Earl Anthony. By who?
Earl Anthony.
Now, this is a newer book. And when I opened it up, I'm reading the foreword, and he's admitting in the foreword that he himself was an informant from the FBI in the Black Panther Party. Well, that's simply to suggest, sisters and brothers, that when we have a public rally, we don't know everybody who's in the crowd. But we want to say to those that are in the crowd that might want to come, we have read the book. So before you turn to that page, I already read the book. This is Brother Salim. He was a student in my class. Did we make you read books?
Yes, sir.
So we read the book. So before you come and open up the Disrupt the Rally page, we read the book. And we got a playbook and a game plan. So if that is your play, we have a play for your play.
Right.
But the reality is, we want our community to know that we're not going to get ourselves arrested. We're going to make our concerns known and understood, and they're not going away because the press is not covering. Some feel like a town hall is only a town hall if the news cameras are here. Wrong. Wrong. Gil Scott Heron saying the revolution will not be televised. You got to catch it live. Now, we may be able, with the help of our technical specialists here, to put some of the words over the internet. You can listen to some of the words. When we make our Caravan for Justice, we'll have cameras there. And you can go to the website, caravanforjustice.org, and see what happened the last time we went with 1,000 people to demand justice in Sacramento. And by the way, a week from Monday, we're going back on Tuesday, May the 26th, with 2,000 to 2,500 people to make our demands. Because there's a bill sitting there right now, AB 312, that was born by the murder of Oscar Grant. And when I went to the state assembly hearing on AB 312 to speak on behalf of the Grant family, I'm going to keep telling you what the staffer of the assembly asked me when I said I came to speak. They said, well, what are you speaking for? I said, I'm speaking on behalf of the family of Oscar Grant. And this well-paid staffer or intern asked me the question, who is Oscar Grant? Now, you're voting on a bill for police oversight at Bart because our brother was murdered, and you're working on the staff to produce this public hearing, and you don't even know who Oscar Grant is? That shows us why laws are not written in our favors. Because those that craft the law don't care about you. The governor called me, that's on the cover of the Sun Report, or the picture of that meeting with faith leaders, mostly from Southern California, saying that he wanted to share with them the budget crisis. Well, that's nice that there's a budget crisis, but maybe you wouldn't be in a crisis if the cities didn't have to pay so many millions of dollars due to police brutality. Maybe the crisis wouldn't be where it is if they weren't building and filling up all these prisons, and I don't have enough money to keep us there. They're now declaring they're going to have to release thousands of inmates. And they're going to have to lay off thousands of prison staff. Well, good. You never should have had to hire that many in the first place. We wouldn't be there except there's a criminal justice system that rules over our lives, which is why we're going to Sacramento. You people wrote these laws. You wrote three strikes. You said that our teenagers should be incarcerated with adults and like adults. You determined that crack cocaine would have a much stringent sentencing policy than powder cocaine, even though crack is made from powder, but rich people got powder and poor people got crack. You say that you're going to go on a war against gangs and drugs and use that war to build and fill all these prisons. Most of the inmates are there due to drug-related crimes. You pay the CIA to bring crack in the community, and you did not stop when all these police, one truckload of guns from reaching the hood.
Right.
had an article in today's Tribune. Said they found, I think, 27 guns. Oh, that's so nice.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
We want to give OPD one big clap.
Right.
One unenthusiastic clap.
Yeah.
Because they don't make guns by the ones.
Oh, yeah.
Whoever's making and distributing the type of weaponry that's in our community, we don't make them, we receive them. And they know that when we receive this type of weaponry in our ignorance and with the lack of opportunity in education and the lack of opportunity in employment, that sooner or later we'll use that gun.
Yeah, yeah.
You mean with this I can get respect in the hood?
Yeah.
With this I can get food on my table? With this I can feed the drug habit that you introduced me to?
All right.
So I'll use this gun. They know when weapons that are reaching the community in record number, coupled with drugs and a liquor store at every corner, that the results are going to be shootout at OK Corral. So they took the position to allow the guns, allow the drugs, build the prisons, and put them back in slavery again. That's why we're going to Sacramento.
Right.
We want to make the picture so clear.
Yeah, yeah.
That they cannot deny that decades of neglect has produced this problem that California is experiencing now. How many billions of dollars could California have saved if they stopped the drugs from coming? How many billions of dollars could California have saved if they stopped the guns from flowing? How many billions of dollars could California have spared if they trained and educated our children properly in the schools? What if they actually taught black children and Latino children to love and respect themselves and their own history? What would the product be? It would have saved the state billions of dollars if they did the right thing in the front end. Now we're all paying on the back end. So we're going to Sacramento on Tuesday, May the 26th, to say never again to those kinds of policies.
Right.
Never again will you pass three strikes.
Right.
And we want to help strengthen the black elected officials to do what they say they want to do. But feel as if they can't get enough grassroots support to do the right thing. The California State Legislative Caucus has on paper the right thing. But when they have to step into the halls of legislators, sometimes they claim to feel alone. Well, we're going to say to our Assemblyman Swanson, to our Speaker of the House, Bass, when you stand for right, you've got a friend. And since we're friends, why don't we tell you how to get more right? Y'all with me now? That's what's happening. Since we're friends, then let's really dialogue on the issue. And let's find a way to present legislation that makes sense to poor people, to suffering people, to those that have been locked out in the state of California. We're going with a key called the Caravan for Justice. To unlock those that have been locked out of the political process and to let it be known that there, yes, you got a budget problem, but your policies produce the budget problem. So we're asking everyone to join us on Tuesday, May the 26th. Our pastor here in Olivet on the last trip sponsored a bus. We want to help him to sponsor two out of Olivet. We want at least two or three coming out of East Oakland at the mosque. We want to encourage No Justice, No Bark, Kate, New Year's Movement for Justice, Just Cause Oakland, and everybody else who I have named or who I have not named to work toward filling up a bus, because when we arrive there, black, brown, red, yellow, and white, we stand there to say that the people have grown tired of unjust government.
Right. Yeah.
And that we're standing here to declare that we are going to back policy change that makes sense to the poor, including Assembly Bill 312, to force poverty to the strongest possible form of oversight and review. How many are with the Caravan for Justice? At a cost.
Praise God. For market calories, we'd like for everyone to join us. The train is rolling. And that's on, again, Tuesday, May the 26th. So it looks like our grant family is occupied and doesn't look like they're going to make it. So I want to give time now to some of our activists to continue sharing the news of what's going on. Please receive a thoughtful commentary from our brother that's participating with us as we're offering our thoughts to Bart in the overview process. Please receive the Reverend Daniel Buford.